Friday, February 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, world powers agree to a cessation of hostilities in Syria. We look at concerns that Australia will be affected by China's economic slowdown. And careful if you copy the singer Adele on YouTube. It's all ahead. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says an agreement between six world powers is now in place to end the hostilities in Syria and speed up humanitarian aid.
We have agreed to implement a nationwide cessation of hostilities to begin in a target of 1 week's time. That's ambitious, but everybody is determined to move as rapidly as possible to try to achieve this. This will apply to any and all parties in Syria, with the exception of the terrorist organizations Daesh and al-Nusra, and any other terrorist organization designated by the Security Council.
Kerry says a UN-supported task force will monitor if aid is reaching needy Syrians. The 17-nation International Syria Support Group meeting in Munich, Germany, has agreed that a task force co-chaired by the U.S. and Russia will work to determine long-term strategies to reduce the violence. Sergei Lavrov is Russia's foreign minister. He said, as you probably know, during all these months, we've had quite an emotional discussion on who's targeting the right targets, who's striking at the right targets, and who is striking at the wrong targets. Now having this agreement, the task force will determine areas taken by Daesh and al-Nusra. We've made a very important practical step forward in this direction. I would also like to underline that for the first time in our work, the document that we have adopted today stipulates the need to cooperate and coordinate not only political and humanitarian issues, but also the military dimension. Kerry said ultimately a peace plan is needed. For more on the agreement, I spoke with VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins, who's covering the talks in Munich. I asked her how the agreement will work.
Well, the two big components of the plan are the cessation of hostilities, as they call it, and the stepped-up effort to get humanitarian aid to Syrians. And this followed a long day of talks that culminated with a meeting of the full International Syria Support Group. And when that meeting finally broke, they came out and announced the plan. And at that point, it was well after midnight. The nationwide cessation of hostilities is due to begin in about a week. It would not include terrorist groups like the Islamic State. They also said there's going to be a task force that's going to be co-chaired by the U.S. and Russia, and that group will work to develop a long-term plan to stop the unrest in Syria. The main concern with the stepped-up humanitarian access is getting to those civilians who've been in affected areas that have in essence been cut off from relief supplies. Some people have faced starvation as a result. And there is a group that's going to meet in Geneva today to begin work on this plan, which would, of course, step up aid. They hope to have the plan up and running in about a week.
What is that group?
This is a humanitarian group that will work under the UN basically to implement the plan, to identify the areas in Syria that are in most need and try to target those areas first, either with airdrops or where possible to use ground transportation to get aid to the affected Syrians.
Okay. How is this agreement, how is this different than ones before, which they tried to have something in place and then it fell apart?
Well, the big difference is this cessation of hostilities language. Of course, the Syrian opposition groups had been calling for a ceasefire, especially because of Aleppo, where bombings by Russia and Syria have sent thousands of civilians fleeing toward the Turkish border. The tensions in Aleppo, of course, played a role in the breakdown of the initial round of proximity talks between the government and opposition. But Secretary of State Kerry, in the late-night news conference, pointed out that a ceasefire has more legal teeth, basically, than a cessation of hostilities, which indicates there's still some disagreement within the group over Russia and Iran's role in backing the Syrian government. At one point during the news conference between Kerry, Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov, and the UN envoy Stefan de Mistura, Kerry admitted that not everyone in the group was in agreement with all of the components discussed, such as the future of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. And he emphasized several times that what's really going to matter is how this new plan is implemented in the coming days.
Now, I believe that David Miliband, president and CEO of the aid organization, the International Rescue Committee, he made his concerns known as well.
He did. He was especially strong when it came to the humanitarian plan. He spoke out particularly against the time frame for humanitarian access, saying you don't wait a week for an emergency operation. He also said that the relief organizations would wait with what he called eager anticipation to see basically if this new humanitarian agreement bears fruit. There seems to be a widespread consensus that the next few days will be critical as these working groups get up and running to see if these plans will be implemented.
Okay, thanks very much, Pam. That's VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins reporting from Munich, Germany. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, meanwhile, there's growing evidence that Turkey and Israel may be on the brink of a historic handshake. Both sides recall their ambassadors after Israeli security forces killed 9 Turks who were trying to break Israel's sea blockade of Gaza in 2010. The latest diplomatic efforts come as Ankara increasingly finds itself isolated in the region over its support for Syrian rebels. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
Turkish and Israeli media reported that both sides held a high-level diplomatic meeting this week on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference. Kaju Gusel, a political columnist for Al Monitor website, says with Turkey at odds with its southern neighbours over its support for Syrian rebels who may be facing defeat, Ankara has become dangerously isolated.
Ankara now badly needs Israel. It shows how desperate Ankara is, because bashing Israel, you know, was used as a political tool in 2009, 2010 onward by Ankara to return to the region. And now they desperately need to have normal relations with Israel.
Turkey's Islamist-rooted AK party has been one of Israel's most strident critics, even reportedly providing sanctuary to prominent Hamas members. Turkish-Israeli relations have been frozen since the 2010 killing of Turkish activists seeking to break Israel's sea embargo of Gaza. But Soli Özel, an international relations expert at Istanbul's Kadahas University, says with Tel Aviv apologizing for the incident and close to reaching a compensation agreement over the slain activists, both sides are working hard to reach a compromise on Ankara's final demand, that the Gaza embargo be lifted.
I think it's almost a done deal, except for the Gaza embargo. The Israelis will not lift it. I suppose they're scrambling to find a formula whereby the Israelis can claim, okay, we haven't lifted the embargo, and the Turks can claim, well, we poked a hole in it. Maybe Turkey will gain privileged access to Gaza and do some humanitarian work, some construction and all that.
In a sign of improving relations, a billion-dollar deal was struck last month between Turkish and Israeli energy companies to develop and distribute Israel's recently discovered huge gas reserves. Ankara is eyeing those reserves to help it reduce its dependence on Russian energy supplies. Ankara and Moscow remain at odds over Turkey's downing of a Russian warplane along the Turkish-Syrian border last November. Ankara is also concerned about Moscow's deepening relations with regional rival Iran, and the fear of a resurgent Iran is another factor driving Turkish-Israeli rapprochement efforts. Özel says this is part of a wider regional process.
Remember that common challenge, threat, is Iran. And Iran is returning to the fold. The embargo has been lifted. Iran is going to normalize its relations with the rest of the world by and large. And this is a matter of concern at varying degrees for Saudi Arabia, Israel, Turkey, and Egypt. Therefore, those four countries are at least at some degree of harmony with one another.
Observers say Ankara is aware improvement of ties with Israel as part of a wider alliance against Tehran could help repair its battered image in Washington, especially if it opens doors to support from the powerful Israeli lobby in the United States. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Now for a look at what's trending on social media, I'm joined by Andrew Palshevsky. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, good to be with you. Well, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee here in the U.S. is considering a bill that would create a policy to focus on combating social media use by terrorists. Now, this is something that we've talked about on the show in the past. It's certainly a huge topic in the news, how the Islamic State group, or ISIL, ISIS, whatever you call them, that they're very adept at using social media to recruit, to show off their videos that they produce, these terrible beheadings and things. And so this bill that's working its way through the U.S. Congress would seek to create a policy to try to combat that. This is something that the government has expressed interest in doing and a necessity to do to really stop these terrorists from getting out there on this social media and having such a huge voice around the world. So as this bill moves through, it's got bipartisan support. We'll see if that indeed leads to some kind of national policy here in the U.S. that would combat some of these terrorist activities on social media. Hmm. It'll be interesting to see how they do that as well, whether it means shutting down more accounts or more censorship of accounts, but more to follow on that as that moves through the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, interesting.
And something else we've talked about earlier in the week, this Twitter algorithm. So right now when you go on Twitter and you go to your feed, you'll see everything in chronological order. That's one of the things that makes Twitter great, is that as people tweet these things out, that's as you see them. But what Twitter's going to start doing is use an algorithm to determine certain tweets getting seen over others, and certain tweets will kind of rise to the top over others. Now, this created an uproar where people said this is going to take away what we love about Twitter, which is this kind of chronological feed. It's going to make it a lot more like Facebook. Well, Twitter's come out and said that, yes, we're going to use an algorithm, but it's going to be like the feature while you were away. This is when you log into Twitter after you've been logged out for a little while and says, while you were away, here are some tweets from people that you may have missed. And they point out that this is something that you can turn on and off. So if you don't like it, you can turn it off. Interestingly, Facebook has a similar thing. They have top stories and then most recent, but they give you an option as well of which one you want to see. So it seems like they are following Facebook in maybe creating some tweets or pushing out some tweets that they think are more prominent, but also giving you the option to just keep Twitter the way it is. But like I said, a lot of uproar over that, and it'll be interesting as they implement this, whether people adopt this new algorithm system or they want to go back to the old one.
No, we'll have to wait and see.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Andrew. That's Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Did you hear that? That's the sound of a gravitational wave generated some 1.3 billion years ago by a pair of black holes that had smashed into each other in a cataclysmic explosion. David Reitze, executive director of the LIGO Laboratory at Caltech.
We have detected gravitational waves. We did it.
Some 100 years after Albert Einstein predicted their existence in his general theory of relativity, scientists announced that they were able to observe ripples in the fabric of space-time. Back on September 14th, a twin laser interferometer gravitational wave observatory detectors located in Louisiana and Washington State picked up the gravitational waves in the final milliseconds of the merger of two black holes to produce a single, more massive spinning black hole. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, careful if you copy the singer Adele and post it on YouTube. China's growth rate has slipped to its lowest level in 25 years, and there are growing concerns in countries that have relied on its booming economy. Analysts now fear that Australia, which has prospered from exports of natural resources to China, could follow other resource-dependent economies into recession. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Since the global financial crisis, the world has largely been reliant on China for economic growth. But falling Chinese demand has led to a sharp fall in the price of commodities, including iron ore and coal, which have sustained the Australian economy. Andrew Charlton, the head of consultancy firm Alpha Beta, says a slowdown in China is bad news for Australia.
China accounts for nearly 50% of all globally traded commodity demand. And that means that if you're a commodity exporter, you are in line for a recession. Canada is in recession. Brazil is in one of the worst recessions in its modern history. And you would have to think that Australia is in that same firing line.
Australia has ambitions to overtake Qatar as the world's biggest producer of liquefied natural gas, or LNG, and has invested heavily in export infrastructure. Markets in China, India and Japan have been targeted for exports, but prices for LNG have collapsed. Tim Buckley is the director of Energy Finance Studies Australasia, a research body.
LNG prices into Asia are down 60%. So Australia in Queensland has just invested $60, $70 billion of capital investment to build the world's largest LNG export facilities. And literally, as we're turning them on as a country, the price of that product has just collapsed 60%.
Tourism, another one of Australia's key sectors, is also nervous about the economic uncertainty in China. Last year, 1 million Chinese visitors came to Australia, a 22% increase from 2014. But Anna Cook, who runs tours in Melbourne, is anxious about the future.
I do worry. I think this time next year will tell, but there's no sign of it just yet. And you never know whether the statistics you are reading, whether they are true, or whether it's perhaps panic-driven.
Despite the slowdown, Tim Harcourt, an economist at the University of New South Wales Business School, believes that China will continue to underpin Australia's future prosperity. A decade-long resources boom may be fading, he says, but other sectors of the Australian economy are cashing in on demand from China.
Australia's sort of moved from the mining boom to the dining boom because we've seen a boom in agricultural exports. And also, in some ways, we've been helping to build the Great Mall of China. A lot of our services and our construction exporters have been helping to build the second and third tier cities in Western China. I think that's part of the next wave of engagement with China from Australia.
Harcourt believes the recently signed Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, will likely help Australian exports, but not at the expense of trade with China. Australia is one of a dozen countries that are part of the TPP, while China is not.
I think strategically Japan and the US wanted to show that they were important leaders in the region, and I think that's part of the TPP story. But for the most part, I think what the TPP will probably do is eliminate some of the agricultural tariffs and protection that we've seen in Japan and Southeast Asia for a long time, and that could be of benefit to Australia, but it's unlikely to divert much trade away from China.
China is Australia's biggest trading partner. Last year, commercial ties between the two countries were strengthened when a historic free trade agreement was signed. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Lots of people love Adele's music, and sometimes they record themselves playing her songs and put them on YouTube. But look out, if your video gets too popular, you might owe Adele some money. Here's VOA's Rebecca Ward.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering.
Adele's song Hello off her latest album 25 is one of the top-selling songs of all time. Adele's fans around the world have responded with recordings of their own versions of Hello. In music, this is called a cover.
Hello, it's me.
Lydia Lee is a high school student from South Korea. Her simple video cover of Hello in English has collected over 17 million views on YouTube. A singer named Sarah receives 5 million views with her cover of Hello in French.
Hello, c'est moi.
In Kenya, a singer named Della has posted a version of Hello in Swahili. The song has about 500,000 streams.
Hello.
The most watched cover of Hello on YouTube, though, is from Leroy Sanchez. He's a musician from the Basque region of Spain. His cover has over 25 million streams.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all.
Karen Rodriguez of Miami works in a hotel, but she has dreams of a singing career. She competed in American Idol, a show for aspiring singers to get noticed. Rodriguez made a video of herself singing Hello in English and Spanish. This week, her Spanish version has more than 8.5 million views on YouTube. She thinks the song going viral will help her find an audience for her music. Word-for-word remakes of songs are allowed, but song translations and adaptations do not have the same freedom. So if you're making a video of yourself singing Hello in other languages, you might owe some money. I'm Rebecca Ward.
Many versions of Hello by Adele. Well, that's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States joins the international community in expressing zero tolerance for female genital mutilation, cutting. This practice, said President Barack Obama, harms and holds back entire communities. It has no place in any community and undermines efforts to empower women and girls. At least 200 million women and girls alive today have undergone female genital mutilation. The latest figures from UNICEF show that nearly 70 million more girls than previously thought have been subject to this barbaric practice. Female genital mutilation cutting includes all procedures that involve the partial or total removal of external female genitalia, or injury to the female genital organs for non-medical reasons. There is no excuse for such blatant human rights violations of women and girls. As President Obama said, just because this is a tradition in some places does not make it right. This practice is harmful and therefore wrong wherever it occurs. That's why the U.S. has funded programming to combat female genital mutilation and cutting in places like Guinea. At home, the United States has criminalized the transport of girls to undergo female genital mutilation, worked with religious leaders and community-based organizations to raise awareness, especially in some immigrant communities where the pressures to engage in this practice remain, and provided grant opportunities for domestic, non-governmental organizations implementing innovative prevention strategies. The United States stands with communities at home and around the globe working to prevent female genital mutilation and cutting. We call on girls and their families, teachers, health workers, community and religious leaders, and government officials to act together to make a difference, said President Obama. It's time to put an end to this harmful practice and to allow communities everywhere to meet their full potential by enabling women and girls to meet theirs.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.